And I apologize for the late start. Welcome to Senate Finance today on March 7th, and it's 9/11. Welcome to Senator Bundy, Senator Huffman, and Olson, Senators Dyson, Stedman, and Co-Chair Green. Morning, everybody. The purpose of today's meeting is twofold. We want to talk about the double fast track, or we'll just now call it the fast track. You have that in your packets along with a spreadsheet. We'll talk about that and the components of that supplemental spending bill. And then we'll trade seats here, and Senator Green will discuss Senate Bill 216 having to do with bail restrictions. And let's see, with that, anything to come before the committee before we begin our deliberations? See none, then let's start. You should have the committee substitute for Senate Bill 232, and you should have a spreadsheet like this, and that spreadsheet should be dated 7:58 a.m. Everybody's got the same page. I thought what I would do is walk down through the significant changes or the items that are funded in this supplemental, and those that aren't funded, I have a sheet for that. Let me, if that's the format, if that's all right with the committee, that's how we'll handle it. The agencies are here to answer questions. James Armstrong has at the table to help us with questions. Also, Ginger has helped with this. So I appreciate that, Ginger, if you have some things to add. We've been joined on the teleconference network by Sarah Fisher Gold from ADA and by Pat Pitney from University of Alaska. Also, Bob Stewart and Roberta Carney to join us this morning on the teleconference network. So welcome you folks. Thanks for joining us. Okay, let's begin. I would preface, this is the first spending bill that come before us in regards to the budget. And I would preface the consideration today by a couple of remarks. As of yesterday, the general fund budget in spending is 21.18% ahead of last year. So it's growing over the last 6 weeks. Those are my numbers. They are pretty close. But regardless of their precision, I think we would all agree that it is an extraordinary increase in spending. And while we're swimming in money, we may be drowning in spending. So this is the first opportunity for us to take a look at the requests of agencies. Senator Bundy?
When you're finished.
Requests, this is the first time to look at agencies and particularly, of course, 06 and the changes, the supplementals that as we talked about earlier, are big, and they're bold, and I'm not sure they're sustainable. So that we operated under some rules as we analyze these, and with our associates on the House side, we will be during this budget process with the subcommittees, and you'll start next week, as we've talked about. We're going to be very reluctant to fund brand new programs. These budgets will reflect a reluctance to fund items where the general fund non-GF money has fallen away, or the federal money has fallen away, with the expectation, for whatever reason, that we just backfill it with general fund money, the people's money. And we're going to take, and this particular bill starts it, take a very skeptical look at major program expansions. And we can understand expansions of 5% and 10%. I would suggest that I have difficulty, unless there's great reason, to understand why other than we have money, why we today are talking about 30%, 40%, 80% increases in programs. So those are the rules that we looked at as we started this budget process. It doesn't mean that the items that were not funded or won't be funded over the next few weeks or the next month aren't good programs. It just means that we have to somehow constrain our spending so that we don't set ourselves up to live in the house of $60 a barrel oil when it isn't $60 a barrel oil, and we're back here talking about taxes and all those other things that were so distasteful and so difficult just three years ago. So if there's a program that is new or expanded or has to be backfilled, then it isn't as simple as just writing a check out of the people's money. It's more difficult to find out what other program in that particular agency, that particular need, can be eliminated or reduced in order to make room for the new needed program. So that's the budget process that we're going to operate under here for the next few weeks. And that's the process under which this supplemental was put together. So with that preface, I'll just begin. And Senator Bundy had a comment.
Just wanted to get an update. At one time, I think I understood that if we funded the administration's budget as requested with the current projected income this year with a quote-unquote surplus, we'd be $50 million in the hole and it with a $50 million deficit. Is that still accurate?
Let's see if I heard what you said. If we took the budget as presented and funded it with the monies available from 06 and 07, we would be about $50 to $60 million out of balance. Is that what you said?
And that was my question, and that is still the case.
That's the numbers I have, yes.
Yeah. And the other question was that way back when, even predating you, we worked 5 years to reduce state spending $250 million, and this supplemental as proposed is larger than what took us 5 years to in reduction.
Well, all the supplementals as proposed, my numbers are larger, are about $259 million. So yeah, if you look back to the five-year plan, we've taken care of that here. And for all sorts of reasons, Alaska is, for want of a better word, we're on a roll. And we may have some things that we didn't do before, and we have a bright future that we need to get prepared for. And so that was a valiant effort and a worthy effort that took place in the late 90s. But as a comparison, Senator Bundy, you're right.
So wants and needs still continue to be a challenge.
It's wants and needs, that's our job. And as we all know in this whole room, there'll never be enough money for everyone. And so, okay, anything else before we start? Okay, let's just, on the spreadsheet dated 7:58 this morning, section one is seafood show, no comment there. And if I'm just going to go down through these, so if there's a question, please put your hand up. Seafood Marketing Institute, RSS, no comment there. That was funded. Corrections, section one and corrections line number four. We fully fund the contractual requirements for increased bed space in Arizona. Line 5, Section 1, corrections, inmate health care, that those are obligations needed for 06 this month with fully funded. Same for inmate health care for bills that have been incurred, and we recognize that, and that request is fully funded at $755,000. Section 1, governor, line number 7. This is $500,000 to continue work in 06 and 07 on the gas line. Line number 8, request of $5.4 million. We're funding $3.9, recognizing that there's 06 expenditures and 07. So the 3.9 is 06. And we're asking them to come back in the operating budget for the requirements of 07. Lines number 9 on your spreadsheet through 14 are Army Guard maintenance facilities, interagency, no comment there. Fuel and utility, that's federal money for $300,000. That's recognized and authorized. We should stop for a moment on 11. This is the request, as you remember, for the $550,000 that Mr. Burns came and asked us for. We're funding this at $250,000. for a couple of reasons. There was a large billion-dollar real estate transaction that took place. In their due diligence account, they had about $300,000 that they thought would be remaining. And so we're recognizing that. That hasn't been trued up yet. That process, while it's been announced, is still continuing, but there may be money in their due diligence account to apply towards that. So we're assuming that $300 is there, and funding the $250. By Mr. Burns' admission, and I think we'd all agree, the number $550 is a guesstimate based on what some of their existing contractors, existing consultants, told them, and so he struck a mid-range. At the $550, it may be a little less, maybe a little more. There's some discussion too as to whether the $550, regardless of the fund source, is the appropriate amount and the timing. So, with all those discussions and some softness and just when we need it and how much we need, the $250 is appropriated out of permanent fund corporate receipts as we fund this this agency. Any questions on that? Heating oil utility price increases, interagency receipts, line 13, Anchorage International Airport. The next two are airport increases and come out of the airport revenue fund. That takes us down to line number 15, which is the marine highway system. They asked for $14.7 million in 06 spending, recognizing that a lot of this has already been spent. We're suggesting an appropriation of 12.2. The difference has to do with looking at their operations through the end of the year, the layup of at least one of the fast ferries and what that means. We'll have, when this bill comes back to the table, some intent language that we would ask that the Marine Highway System respond to, and that intent language would have to do with the reduction in the $14.7 million increase.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stebbins?
Yes, thank you. So the intent of the committee then is on the $2.5 million reduction, and we all realize that the fast ferries consume a lot of fuel, and with one of them tied up and the other one operating less than daily, we'd expect, you know, a change. Then the what kind of language are we looking at attaching to that, and then I assume that we've gone through and scrubbed up the fuel costs of operations of these ships in place, and I'm curious on the comfort level of the operational flow. So in a month or 2 months, we're not faced here with them, you know, threatening to tie up the whole fleet.
Yeah. Three things that rolled into this. One, scrubbing up the fuel cost is correct. We did that. That's part of the reduction. The other reduction is recognizing that if the fast ferry is tied up, it's $250,000 a week savings. And I believe that language will read something into mid-April or mid-May, something like that. We'll have the details on that. The third piece is that today in House Transportation, Senate Transportation, there's a major meeting to try to continue to guide and direct the ferry system to understand where it is and what it needs. But for 06 spending, this seems to be appropriate. And we'll have more backup as to where it came from. But those two initial items that I spoke of is the results in the $2.5 million reduction.
Okay, thank you.
Line 16, we'll skip over that for the moment because it refers to the next page and having to do with the new voice over internet protocol. So that we'll come back to that. Line 17, Section 5, Commerce, Arctic Winter Games, we're suggesting funding that at $250,000. They requested $500,000. The next is a building conversion in Fairbanks to convert a building for expansion of short-time prisoners that they need at the Fairbanks correctional facility. Line 19 deserves a little thought and comment. We had As you know, you'll remember the bill had 42 different requests for increased fuel and energy costs. We tried to go down that list, and it didn't take long for all of us, as we were reviewing the bill, arguing over who needed what when. And so that, so I said, well, we're not going to sit here and do 42 of these. So what we decided to do was Ginger and James went down the list, tried to analyze it as best they could with some input from the agencies and the university. And so what we're doing is that we're going to pass the pain right back up the chain and give the OMB $6.736 million, and they can go through the battle of trying to decide where to put it, because frankly, I don't know where to put it, and it would be truly arbitrary for us to do that. And so that's the appropriation, the best we can estimate what that is. And James, anything else on that, if you could help with that?
James Armstrong, 8th Senator Wilkin. In the bill, in the draft CS, I neglected through a Excel formatting error to include DEC within the list of agencies that would get some of the 6.7. So that'll be corrected in the CS before.
We'll bring the CS back. We'll have that as a correction. Thank you, James. Anything else on statewide utility increases? Section 8 law is the fully funding the judgments and claims. 9 is authorized $9 million in federal receipts to start building ships or a ship for the United States Navy, which is interesting, some sort of an expeditionary ship. So we'll track that. That's an interesting expansion of our economic development in Ketchikan. Senator Stedman. Line 22, transportation, we fully funded the replacement of the turbine jet or the exhaust fan in the Whittier Tunnel, so they'll have a backup in the tunnel for their exhaust needs. 23 is just a change in authorization. In fact, all of these down to line 29. At Cordova Airport, $3 million in federal funds. Funded Kotzebue Sand Building, $1.5 million in federal money. Unalakleet Airport Paving of $12.1 million federal money authorized. Line 27, 9G is just a language change, no change in money. Let's see, same with, $15 million authorized federal money for non-National Highway System pavement and bridge maintenance. That authority is granted. Line 29, Disaster Relief Fund, $4.1 million is fully funded. Line 30 deserves some comment. This appropriation is the beginning of the voice over internet protocol replacement of our phones. There's been considerable discussion over this and numbers that fly all over the place. But the way I look at it, if I'm incorrect, let me know. This appropriation starts us down a track of some $22 million in capital appropriation that will replace most of our phones in the state to use VoIP communications. We are in a contract or close to a contract with Cisco, Northrop Grumman, to bring our three data pipes together into one, to converge them into one pipe, data, video, and what's the third one?
Voice,
thank you. Voice, data, and video will come in, be converged in one pipe. This is the start of this. Their original request for $5 million, it went to $1 million. Discussing it with Commissioner Nordstrand, it's $2.5 million gets him, I think, is a generous amount to get him started in 06. And it really doesn't make a difference because we're going to spend it in 06 or 07 or 08 anyhow. The $22 million is the number we should be focused on. In the operating budget, there's almost $3 million or a little more than $3 million having to do with operating costs to institute this this effort. That's another discussion that we'll have. But this is the capital piece, and I'm sure Commissioner Nordstrand and others are comfortable with starting this. But this is the beginning of an effort that we'll see here at the table for next two or three years. Any discussion or comment on that? Senator Hoffman?
On the whole presentation or just
No, just on VoIP?
No.
Okay. Let's see, the next line 31, 32, 33 are some sort of source change, and I can't explain it, but David Teal can. So, David, I wonder, where are you? You might just explain this for us.
David Teal from Legislative Finance. Both of these cases are strictly technical changes. We would be using the same money, and it doesn't change the source of the money that's being used. On line 31, for instance, we really are using snowmobile trail receipts to do that project. It was just miscoded in the budget as RSS, Receipt Supported Services. So we're fixing that in lines 32 and 33. Again, they're currently coded as using Receipt Supported Services when actually those receipts are from the Entry Commission surplus receipts and are crossing appropriation lines and being used in Fish and Game. So it's just a...
Just a second. We're going to get $50 towards balancing our budget. Which agency would that be? Thank you. There's 50 we saved. Okay, I'm sorry, David. Go ahead.
That's about it. There is no impact on the budget, no impact. It's the same money being used. It's just correcting the name of the money. So it's no impact at all.
Any questions, David, on that technical change? Okay. Why don't you stay there, David, in case there's any other questions. From the committee, let me go over what wasn't funded. I think I owe you that explanation. What's not in this, what was in the original request, is the Small Municipality Energy Assistance Program for $6.4 million. We had considerable discussion about that. I remain opposed to that funding this year for all the reasons that we spoke of earlier. At this time, we don't recognize the increase in power cost equalization of $5.4 million. We need to have a comprehensive plan on where we're going to take PCE this year, and that will come together as we work through the operating budget. You don't have that sheet here. We didn't fund the increase, the $500,000 increase in the bulk fuel bridge loan program. That was a program expansion that didn't seem to be appropriate. We didn't start, back to my original comments, we didn't start bringing general fund into the low-income home energy assistance program, which in the past has been about an $11 million federally funded program. It shrunk a bit, about $1 million from the feds. But we've chosen not to automatically backfill that million and add another $7.8 million to that because that would start, as we talked earlier, starting general fund into a program that's traditionally been all federally funded. And last, we didn't fund the tripling of the technical assistance to communities for bulk fuel systems, adding three people that amounted to three more circuit riders to help with bulk fuel. There was two other things. If you remember the Parks Department, the Division of Parks had some problems, but we had given them authority to collect some monies in order to maintain their parks. They haven't been able to do that. They're short about $350,000. We recognize that. We've made some changes, and we're working with the other body as this bill works through to make this work for them. So let that just sit for the moment for Division of Parks, and we'll work with the House to recognize that and help fill some sort of need to lessen that authority for receipt and increase the money they have to maintain some of the critical needs in their park. The last is we didn't fund the Manilik Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. the building that fell away because of a federal audit, the support for that. So Senator Olson and I have been in conversation with that, and we're working on that. But for the moment, that has not been funded, and we'll talk some more with Senator Olson about that. So, okay, with that, that is that's the committee substitute. Let's any questions from the committee, Senator Huff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my remarks are to the initial proposal on the energy package that the governor had introduced. You know, I appreciate your comments on power cost equalization and taking a look at where we're going with that. But at times, during these times of high energy costs and high oil prices, the state of Alaska is benefiting tremendously by that. You know, we're seeing the surplus of $1.25 billion. But the fact of the matter is, as a result of the high prices, Alaskans are suffering. And when we're getting about $60 million a barrel of oil, it doesn't seem unreasonable to me that we would take $1 out of the wealth that the state has been getting, not because of anything that we've done, but because of the high prices of oil, and try to assist at least those that are in most need. And I'm talking about the LIHEAP program. It may be new, but we're in new territory, Mr. Chairman. We're in areas of $60 barrel oil, something that I never envisioned even 5 years ago. But to say that it's a new program and we're going to ignore the needs of the citizens of the state of Alaska, and because it's a new program, I think is a little bit short-sighted. I think we should be taking a small portion, say a dollar a barrel, and looking at how we should distribute those dollars. And I, at this table, have asked about the Marine Highway increases, that's a program that I support. But I would say that the ridership of the Marine Highway system is probably 50% people from the outside. But here, we're including $12 million to assist those people that are primarily not Alaskans. And I'm using this as an example, not because I oppose the Marine Highway system, it's a program that I support. But if we're going to do that and assist tourists to come up to this state and enjoy Alaska and help stimulate our economy, and we will fund the increases in fuel costs so that that might happen, I think we should be able to look at the rest of Alaskans that are really struggling. And I know you live in a part of the state that has cold temperatures as well, Mr. Chairman, but I think when we're considering the fast-track supplemental, we should be thinking about how we can assist those citizens of this state, and I think it's only right, you know, and I'd leave those comments. And you had stated earlier that we could possibly look at some of these others later, but I think at least for this program, I think we should be including something in there, even though it's a new program, in the fast track supplemental. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Stebbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm always concerned about the issues that we are constitutionally mandated to cover and ones that we're not. And I recognize the support at the table for the Marine Highway system. You know, and there is a $12 million increment here, which is large. I don't think anybody could argue it's not. But the state is constitutionally mandated to provide transportation to the citizens of the state of Alaska. The issue of residents versus non-residents is I think there's a lot of federal money used in that transportation system, the main highway system also, so it's not as clear of a dividing line there. We, you know, we cannot not fund something because people from outside Alaska use it. That's not, I don't think, a relevant issue at hand. Going forward on the power cost equalization and other energy assistance, we're going to go forward and come up with a overview of that whole energy assistance area to the state. And my understanding that we've also been working on cleaning up the NPRA issue, and hopefully there'll be some added funds in the future for NPRA. And the power cost equalization fund is mentioned in that whole NPRA issue. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll end my comments.
Other comments? Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I look at some of the issues that we've been talking about, certainly we're dealing with some big numbers and some issues that we're passionate about. And since NPRA has been brought up, I just want to remind the committee here that NPRA has to do with a federal entity, and for us to try and decide where those impact aid is going to be spent or how it's going to be redistributed is not going to be one that's going to be easily disseminated to other programs. So I just want to remind the committee of that.
I'm not going to take that bait. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Senator Bundy. Easy on you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fish or cut bait or take the bait. I had an interesting conversation Saturday at the Anchorage Caucus with students from the university. And as you might imagine, they have a variety of interests. And I think the bottom line that I was hope I was able to leave with them, and they seem to understand after having sat through 4 hours of testimony from various entities, all of which wanted money, is that every dollar of state spending has a loyal and vocal constituency. And as you said earlier, there'll never be enough money to fund everything that everyone wants. So what I asked them, and I'm going to say at the beginning of our budget process, and may end up, in spite of my best intentions, having to repeat it from time to time as we go through, if there are those that want additional spending, then they have to acknowledge that they need to take money away from someone else. And please tell me which Peter they're going to rob to pay what Paul. And they have to be part of that decision that there are other programs less worthy or constituencies less deserving if we're going to take money from one area and put it in another.
Other comments? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your comments about the energy issues, and we had considerable discussion here a couple of weeks ago at this table about trying to figure out all the programs that are going on in the state that provide energy assistance and try to see some kind of an integrated picture of all the things that are available and who's getting it and which are the higher priorities. And I really hope before we leave here in 2 months that we will have initiated a process that will get us a report and that give us a basis for a rational analysis of all those programs and how they interact and who gets them, who's eligible and who gets them, so that we can look at them as an entity and instead of it just as individual ones. I sure need that. If we could get any part of that before we finish this budget process, that would be useful.
It's not only on the existing programs, but with the price of energy and the price of petroleum products, people now are looking at an alternative. And so, as you said, if we can isolate those places where we're spending X money, there may be a way to direct Y money. Very pointedly with alternative energies. So, but we won't know that until we get what I think you're after. So it's a worthy goal. Okay, what else before we ask folks on teleconference if they have anything to say? Senator Hoffman?
Just one more comment to Senator Bundy. You know, I don't think that in this proposal we would be asking to take away money from an individual program because it's the high cost of fuel. We could structure this program or have legislative intent that if we gave this money in LIHEAP to the low-income people of the state of Alaska that most need it, that when the fuel prices drop down, that the program would no longer be there. You know, that could be legislative intent, and I've seen that many times at this table. So it's not that we are faced with a situation where we don't have $250 million here. You know, it may be one-time funds, but maybe, and if it is, you know, it's hard to say, I hope it's just a temporary situation for the individuals that are suffering, but for the state coffers, I hope that it stays there. But if it does stay there, you know, it's not taking money away. That money, if it stays there, the money will be there in the future to pay for this assistance to the people that most need it. And if the price goes down, the money isn't there, and then the people that are dependent on this program would no longer be required. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other comments? Senator Olson.
One last comment, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this budget, certainly we're trying to figure out how we're going to handle things that we could plan for. Energy prices, corrections, you know, facilities like that need to be maintained. But, you know, I just want to make a point that there are emergencies out there that we need to look at that are time critical. One of the, and there are other needs out there as well that are critical. But one thing I would like to point out is that, you know, when a school burns down, those students that are affected by the tragedy certainly need to be taken care of. And I think with the spring construction coming on, the need to go ahead and try and get things done, where in this particular case the White Mountain School burned down and children are out there trying to get an education. The parents are concerned with the construction season coming on. I just want to make sure that people are fully aware that those students throughout the state of Alaska and in White Mountain in particular, you know, those are the students that are going to be taking care of us when we are old, and they'll be sitting at this table, we're out there in the hospital on a ventilator or something like that to go ahead and, or trying to find our arthritis pills because we can't find you don't have our glasses on. But I want to just say that the point
speak for
is
yourself.
What's that?
Speak for yourself.
You know, they do have medication for baldness as well, and you know, that's, you know, point of order. The point is, we may have somebody like that's lacking in education because of those particular things. And so I just want to say that
we're aware of the issue in White Mountains.
Thank you,
Senator Olson, and you're done for today.
Thank you.
All right, other discussion before we go to the teleconference.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is it possible to dig deep enough hole that you can never get out again? Is that possible?
Still got 60 days, so. All right, let's go to teleconference network. And I'm just going to go down the list. If you don't have a comment, I want to make sure you have the opportunity. Sarah Fisher-Goad, comments, or just Sarah for questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher-Goad with the Alaska Energy Authority. I just wanted to say that just the not funding the PCE level does keep us at 66% of a prorated level for the rest of the fiscal year, and that does average to 75% for the entire fiscal year. And I'm just here for questions if there's anything else.
Okay, thank you. Questions, comments, for Sarah? Okay, thank you. Pat Pitney from the university. Anything, Pat?
No, it sounds like we're in that section 6 or 7 at what would be 82% of our original 2.8.
You're part of the 42 requests. Hey, thank you, Pat, for joining us this morning. Let's go to Anchorage. Bob Stewart, anything, Bob, for Senate Finance today?
None.
Bob?
Negative, just here for questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir, for joining us. How about Roberta Carney? Roberta, anything for Finance?
That's the same. We're just here for questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And last, Kristen Ryan. Kristen, anything from DEC?
Thank you, sir. Only that we're glad to hear that we're part of the 42 people. 42 agencies in the energy.
Okay, well, thanks you folks for joining us this morning. Anybody else in the teleconference network? Okay. All right, back to the table. We'll switch gears here in a moment. Tomorrow we'll bring this back for amendments, if any, from committee members, and then we'll get it out of here in the next few days. And when we get people back in the building, we'll schedule it for the floor. Let's see. I think that that's it. Just so the committee knows, I feel I should keep you advised because our friends at Horizon and Tote yesterday raised their fuel surcharge another percent, so everything coming in to all the ports in Alaska now carries a 17% fuel surcharge over last year. So it touches all of us, this energy thing, not just a few. So with that, James?
Before you close out, there is one technical change in the lapse appropriations that needs to be made. Section 9F needs to be added to Section B. I just wanted to make the committee aware of that, and I'll work on that DMV $50 amendment right now.
Okay. All right, we're going to roll to bail restrictions, and looking at the audience, some of you ought to stay here. But other than that, let's we'll stand at ease.
Senate Finance will come back to order. We have on our agenda today Senate Bill 216, which has been introduced by two wonderful senators, Huggins and Green. And Senator Huggins and staff will be walking us through this legislation. And gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Senator Green and committee members. Senator Green adds a color to this. And I just try to put a few words with it. Before we get started, I want you to notice that there was a number of people departed here, and I think they were worried about the news that this bill brings. When you get in trouble, there's no soft handling in it. And I would just read you a couple of words to begin with that will capture the essence of what we're talking about here. Nothing in this chapter allows a court to order a defendant to be released temporarily or periodically, either before or after conviction. What this essentially means is, as you read news accounts across the nation, when we have people either before or after trial that can't make bail, and lo and behold, we can't find them. They're in Mexico. I just read an account this morning where an individual had pled because his son needed a kidney dialysis replacement, please let me go, and he's now in Mexico, and his son still needs a kidney. The people that we're dealing with in today's society that are incarcerated for one reason or another have many schemes, and they're well beyond the sophistication of our older system where we essentially open the gates either way for them to come or go, and they've abused that. So today to present this, so I think with much more eloquence than I is to my right here is Josh, a young man I'm proud of. And Josh, would you take it from here?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, this is basically brought about because of some loopholes in our judicial system, like Senator Huggins was saying.
Josh, would you give your name and who you are for this association?
My name is Josh Temple. I'm staff for Senator Huggins and Senate Bill 216. He's saying this is brought about because the abuse of some loopholes in our system here. One notorious example, which brought about a lot of grief in the Valley, which I know is your district there, Senator Green. Last October, a Valley judge released a man with five felony charges against him, including burglary, kidnapping, and assault. When he was a minor, he had already had a record of escaping from temporary release, and he was most definitely a flight risk. When he did escape on temporary release, The judge released him. He ended up escaping. When his mom went to the bathroom, he cut off his ankle bracelet. When they found him, his hair was dyed. He was babysitting a kid, and he was in possession of 2 stolen pistols. So what he was planning on doing with those, we don't know. But this bill will fix these loopholes. First of all, it gets rid of temporary releases and puts any extenuating circumstances that might happen, it puts those in the hands of the very capable DOC. Portia's back here to talk about that in a little bit. The other thing this bill does is it makes unlawful evasion a felony for people that are out on, or that are charged with a felony, and it makes it a misdemeanor for people that are charged with a misdemeanor. And basically, they're charged on an equal basis. So if they escape from temporary release, they'll be charged on an equal basis. So if they're in, say, a halfway house, and they're allowed to go out and take out the garbage and they run away, they'll be charged with another misdemeanor or felony. This really isn't the only example. Senator Huggins just gave another example. And then that same month of October, there were 3 other of these same things, escapes from temporary releases. And I believe in Fairbanks, there was actually, up until they decided to get rid of them for the most part, there was about 50% of the people weren't coming back from temporary releases. So, if there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Okay, Josh, it appears to me that Section 3 is sort of the heart of what we're doing here. It's the new language. And unlawful evasion in the first degree. And then the others are amended just to include that language back at the first. But what actually changes in the order if there is a legitimate reason for someone to request?
Sure.
You know, temporary release. Does the procedure for getting that release change via this legislation?
It will. And basically, they won't be allowed temporary releases per se. They won't be able to allow it from the judge. The judge will have signed a certain bail. The person can't afford that bail. The judge obviously knows, has a good idea of what they can and can't afford. They won't be allowed to go out on bail, but they can, through DOC, request to be escorted to a funeral or whatever the extenuating circumstances may be. And if DOC, who is there with them and knows what they're actually like, if they decide that they're worthy of going wherever they're requesting to go, they'll escort them.
Okay, where is that language?
That's in Section 5, Senator Green. That was the portion that I read. The defendant in a criminal case may be admitted to bail after conviction only as permitted under Alaska Statute 1230-040. However, nothing in this chapter, and this is the most important operative part, nothing in this chapter allows a court to order a defendant to be released temporarily or periodically, either before or after conviction. So this takes the authority. This is not beating around the bush. This takes the authority from the court system to the professionals that are used to dealing with these kind of characters, Department of Corrections.
Okay. Is a reference to 1230-040 the Department of Corrections?
I'll defer to Ms. Parks.
I'm just trying to figure out where it specifically says.
Right.
Portia or Susan?
It's a bail statute.
Bail statute. Okay, thank you. Okay, are there questions? Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this the provision that people utilize to go to funerals of their mother or father or family?
That's correct.
So they would not be allowed to do that under this legislation?
Well, it would be a major tightening, and the decision authority would then rest with Department of Corrections. And supervision is a major piece of it.
So they can
doesn't
still
prohibit it.
So they can still go to the services if the
that's correct.
If there's
that's correct.
Escorted by the
that's correct.
Department of Corrections.
That's correct.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Senator Dyson.
Thank you, and thanks for bringing this forward. It's going to incur some cost for the escorting. Is there any provision in current law to allow the perpetrator to participate in the costs that are come from the escort?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dyson, yes. And as I recall, the family may, in fact, bear part of the burden on that. But Portia Parker can speak to that more eloquently than I.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of curious. Earlier it was mentioned the halfway house issue, where someone may walk away from a halfway house or something along those lines. And if they do that, then is that an automatic trigger for a felony, or how, or am I misreading this, or how does that work?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Good check. It wouldn't be an automatic trigger for necessarily for a felony per se, but if they do walk away from there, whatever they've been charged with, if they're there for misdemeanor, if they're there for whatever they're there for, they'll be charged with that again. So as it stands now, if they walk away from halfway house and they're charged with a felony, they can only be charged with a misdemeanor. So this really isn't much deterrent for them to stay. I mean, if they're going to be charged with
That was, if I might, that was a major topic of conversation previously, and we actually amended it because we had it a double felony, even if it was a misdemeanor. And after some debate, we thought it was more logical to, if it was a misdemeanor, to have it a misdemeanor, and that prevailed.
I could follow up, Madam Chair. Does that mean if, under this scenario, if somebody was, you know, in the halfway house and under charge, that eventually got him there or her there as a felony, and maybe they did some of their time, and then all they're kind of, you know, paying the tail end of that, and they walk away, they'd get another felony, and then if this happened to be the third felony, it would be put them away forever. Or?
Why don't we have Susan Parks and Portia answer that question? Are there more questions for the sponsors at this time? Okay, Susan, if you and Portia don't mind coming forward, and then if we need you back, Senator Huggins and Josh will. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the record. I'm Susan Parks, Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. Representative Senator Stedman, through the chair, as I understand it, your question is, if someone's in serving time in a felony in a halfway house and they walk away, they'll get charged again with a felony. As I understand your question, these statutes, just to sort of give an overview, are a little complicated. We have escape statutes and we have unlawful evasion statutes, and they all cover a little bit different circumstances. Some of them cover the prison kind of situation, you know, the Spring Creek, those kind of situations. Some of them cover the halfway house or other types of official detention like halfway houses. The bill was meant to address the temporary release. So there's situations where people are released temporarily, don't come back, and then there's situations where people simply leave. And so each of them are dealt with a little bit differently, and the purpose of this bill was to try to, just because you're given a temporary release and you don't come back under our current statutory scheme, it was treated more leniently than if you just walked away, and that didn't seem to make a lot of sense. In fact, you were given a privilege which you abused, and which to my mind means maybe you should be dealt with a little bit more harshly. But to answer your question, if someone is serving time in a halfway house, they've been placed there by Department of Corrections to serve a sentence for a felony, yes, you could then be charged with a felony if you simply walk away. And you would be presumptive based on however many felonies you've got on your record.
Because I guess that goes to the seriousness. Of the potential seriousness, because in the incident in the valley, the man had I mean, had been involved in all sorts of wrongdoing during the time he was released and was probably one step away from another very, very serious crime. I think that's what this speaks to. I saw another hand. Senator Dyson.
Thank you. I'm always a little wary of when we fall into the kind of the cliche of using bad examples to or bad cases to come up with draconian solutions. And I will certainly inquire my friend Doug over here in a few minutes about this. But are we really trying to preclude judges from making inappropriate decisions, and that with more stringent statutes as opposed to getting judges that use more common sense?
Madam Chairman, Portia Parker, Department of Corrections, for the record. In response to that, I think this is a much bigger issue and bigger problem than this individual case. This individual case did highlight it to the public, but this has been an ongoing problem for the Department of Corrections for a long time. We've just been dealing with it. One of the major problems, actually, which is much more problematic for temporary releases than to attend a service or a temporary release like that, is for assessments or medical, where, like in the case of Fairbanks, when it got to the worst point, 50% of the offenders were not returning. They were absconding, and then a bench warrant had to be issued. And if they did return, a substantial portion of the offenders come back either under the influence of drugs or alcohol and or bringing contraband back into the facility. And just in Kenai, we just had a three-hour release where the offender's released for 3 hours and has to come back in. And when we do that, it's an actual release. They're given their property, they're discharged for a release, they have to come back, we have to re-fingerprint, we have to go through the entire process, we have to have another medical exam, another full booking process, and often we have to dry cell the inmates because there's such a problem with contraband. And so in talking with our substance abuse treatment provider in our system and who manages our programs, her advice there also was that it's not good for the offender because they tend to go out, get into more trouble, face additional charges when they're apprehended again or if they come back with contraband. In this particular case, raising it from a felony for felony offenders is hopefully a deterrent. If you are out on facing arson, kidnapping, burglary, tampering with evidence, vehicle theft, another misdemeanor for not returning means nothing. So I think that is an appropriate change for if you are facing felony charges, it's felony escape or felony unlawful evasion, and if you're facing a misdemeanor, then to be charged with additional misdemeanor if you walk away. And there's certainly increased costs to the entire criminal justice system when offenders don't come back. They have to be rearrested, so there are more charges. So that the best thing would be the deterrent so that people actually do come back as ordered or don't walk away.
Senator Dyson.
I appreciate that. Still, the question are the problems we're facing due to a lack of judgment on people who are making these decisions or an inadequacy in our statutes?
Madam Chairman, I do not think that there is a justification for temporary releases.
Thank you.
Other questions? Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify?
I'd like to ask Doug.
Do you want to? Well, the reason I ask, he's not signed up, that's all. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Doug Williver with the court system.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is a difficult one for you, but our judges need the support of a tighter statutes like Senator Huggins has put forward?
To the chair, Senator Dyson, well, as you know, we generally don't take a position on the merits of legislation, whether they're wise or foolish or a good idea or not. Judges disagree amongst themselves as much as you all do about the merits of individual bills. Our only concern with this bill has been whether it will impact our therapeutic courts and how people get into those. We think that for the most part it's not going to impact those courts. There's one kind of minor issue I've been working with the sponsor and corrections on that will probably get worked out through the process about getting into residential treatment, but that may or may not be a problem either. So I'm afraid I can't help you with whether this is a good idea or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Portia, would you come back up, please? Susan? With the difference that this legislation brings about, how would the procedure be different in the future if someone who is incarcerated asked to be released on a temporary basis for a family emergency?
Madam Chairman, this does not in any way affect what a judge can do with bail. So as a pre-sentence inmate, the judge can still change bail, reduce bail, so that the offender could possibly make bail and be put into third-party custodial care. This does not change that. If the offender cannot make bail, or the judge chooses not to reduce the bail, and the offender has an emergency or a situation, and they do this with Department of Corrections after sentencing, because it is not a release from custody, if we approve, it would be a transport, an escorted transport, so it's not a release from custody. We handle those through the internal process. The probation officer puts in the request. It comes straight to the deputy commissioner or commissioner to deal with. They're usually situations that we have to deal with immediately, if it is a death in the family or some justifiable emergency. Then we consider those on a case-by-case basis and follow our policies.
Thank you. Just Stedman had his hand up first. Senator Stedman.
Oh, Madam Chairman, I'm just struggling with the cost of this. I would think that there would be some positive sides of implementing it in that it would be a deterrent from people walking away. And when they walk away, that is a cost to the system. Eventually, they're going to get caught and have to, you know, if they come back in as a misdemeanor or however they're going to come back and be dealt with. I see that the, you know, the fiscal notes are zero, but even if the system wasn't quite zero, I think it might be beneficial to the society to implement this.
Madam Chairman, if I might respond to that, escorted visits are paid for by the inmate or the family, and we receive payment prior to transport. And we have very few of those that are a death in the family or emergency. Most of the temporary releases that are done currently by the court system are for assessments and other, mostly substance abuse assessments and other assessments that we can do on site, that we accommodate, that the inmate does not need to be released to get those assessments, or they can be telephonic assessments, which is what is done in Anchorage. So there should be very little cost or change to how things are done currently.
Senator Dyson.
That question was just answered.
Oh, thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Okay, Senator Huggins, is there anything further you would like to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charlie Huggins. Well, as I said, in talking to people in Mat-Su, based on, you know, the occurrence that many of us know of, and then after looking and discussing with Senator Green and looking up to our friends to the north in Fairbanks, you see symptoms are about Alaska. And my assumption, if we went to Anchorage, we would find some indicators that essentially say to us that people that have some serious difficulties that are a threat to you and I and our families and our neighbors have almost a swinging door opportunity to get back out and do mischief. In the case we cited, the individual had a firearm with a very young youth when discovered after having fled, dyed their hair. So we're talking about people that are beyond, I think, what the system was designed for. They're deceptive, they're dangerous, and I think it's long overdue that the system be tightened, and this process will tighten the system.
Are there any other questions for the sponsor? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions, Ted, so I'll get with you before we pass this out. Are there anything else? Senator Wilkin, do you have anything else?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Anything else to come before the committee? You're adjourned.